It's a very robust relationship. It's an expanding relationship. It has been described as the defining partnership of the 21st century.
India's Prime Minister visits Washington in his first meeting with Donald Trump. It's Monday, June 26th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also online on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, a slow search for survivors from a landslide in China. The fight against Islamic State in the Philippines. Fighting for peace in Korea. A unique Islamic store, smart exoskeletons. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is here in the United States as he's preparing to visit the White House later Monday to discuss the fundamental nature of the relationship between Washington and New Delhi in his first meeting with President Donald Trump. VOA White House correspondent Peter Heinlein reports the two leaders will be looking to put the bilateral trade relationship on a positive track and build on the gains of the last 3 years.
It's a very robust relationship. It's an expanding relationship. It has been described as the defining partnership of the 21st century. One of the agenda of the visit, if I may say so, or the areas of focus, is how to further push and develop economic and commercial cooperation between the two countries for mutual benefit.
That was Gopal Bagle, formerly foreign ministry spokesman, who says Indian officials have expressed optimism of Modi's two-day visit, which will lay the groundwork for an expansion in ties. We hear now from Peter Heinlein at the White House.
The outward signs are auspicious. Days before Indian Prime Minister Modi's visit, a rural Indian town with little electricity or running water renamed itself Trump Village. A group of Hindu nationalists held a party with a huge cake to celebrate Trump's birthday, June 14th. Historically, the India-U.S. relationship has hinged on personal chemistry between the country's leaders. And there is reason to believe Modi and Trump will get along personally. Though they have not met, they share a fondness for social media and a sharp focus on domestic job creation.
They are professional deal makers. To be sure, one comes more from a private sector background and one comes from a combination of rising up the ranks of both party and the government of India. But here are people who know how to operate, who know how to make a deal, who know how to make a statement.
Trade issues could be an irritant in the talks. Trump has placed India on the list of countries whose policies should be reviewed because of its large trade surplus with the United States. Trump also ordered a review of U.S. immigration rules governing the H-1B visa program, which could sharply affect India's booming information technology industry. American businesses are urging Trump to take even stronger measures to pressure India because promises by previous India leaders to lower trade barriers have not lived up to expectations. Linda Dempsey from the National Association of Manufacturers explains via Skype.
We have long, as manufacturers, sought a bigger and more improved relationship with India, but unfortunately there's a lot of long-standing barriers that remain in place and new ones that are being put in place.
Unlike in past U.S.-India summits, no mega deals are expected, though India is pushing for a multi-billion dollar purchase of U.S. Predator drones. Experts say this first Trump-Modi face-to-face is an opportunity to make a course correction that will set the tone in Washington-New Delhi ties for years to come. Peter Heinlein, VOA News, the White House.
Some discordant notes have already emerged with Trump, who wants to restrict work visas used by many Indian professionals in the United States and who irked New Delhi by accusing it of making its participation in the Paris Climate Accord, quote, contingent on receiving billions and billions and billions of dollars in foreign aid. Modi set aside decades of mistrust to cement closer ties with Washington. But analysts in New Delhi warn India may be low on Trump's diplomatic priorities. The strongest convergence between the two leaders is expected to be on terrorism. Both leaders have a strong commitment to root out Islamic terror groups. The announcement Sunday that the United States plans to supply 22 Guardian drones to India, that's a deal worth over $2 billion, should also please New Delhi and be seen as a signal of Washington's commitment to count India as a major defense partner. Analysts say there is less clarity on how strongly the Trump administration will invest in a strategic partnership that deepened between the two countries amid common perceptions about the need to balance China's growing assertiveness in the region. Recent trade commitments made between the world's two largest democracies accounted for a five-fold jump to $500 billion. And while India has been pressing for technology transfers and local manufacturing, that could run counter to Trump's pledge to revive manufacturing in the United States. Chintamani Mahapatra, professor of international studies at the Center for Canadian, U.S. and Latin American Studies in New Delhi.
Now, when Donald Trump talks about America first and Narendra Modi talks about Make in India, then there are people worried whether there is a contradiction in these two policies or not. Every country, friend or foe, partner or adversary, is worried about the future of the relationship. So that is why even in India, we do not know what is going to happen. That doesn't mean that we are really concerned that Indo-US relationship is going to change so much that we don't know how to handle it.
Most observers say that the biggest takeaway from the talks could be just a good meeting between the two leaders. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. At least 150 dead in Pakistan tanker explosion. 10 dead, dozens missing in China landslide. China brokers deal between Pakistan and Afghanistan for managing crisis-hit ties. Australian spy planes to help tackle Islamist threat in Philippines. Muslims in Asia pray for peace as Ramadan Holy Month ends. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories, and there's a lot more, too, when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia and our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Hopes are fading for dozens of people still missing following a deadly landslide in southwestern China, where 10 bodies have been recovered so far. Officials say 93 people remain missing after a huge landslide Saturday buried the mountain village of Sinmo in Sichuan province. Provincial officials on Sunday lowered the earlier body count from 15. As of late Sunday, only three people, a couple and their month-old baby, had been rescued after the wall of rock and debris destroyed at least 40 houses. Resident Tang Hua describes the disaster. Tang Hua says it was as strong as if winds were blowing by or a big truck was rumbling by. The houses were shaking as if there were an earthquake. We rushed out and saw massive smoke. With a thundering sound, the smoke suddenly lifted. We realized it was a mudslide. As we ran for safety, we looked this way and saw this village flattened. More than 3,000 people, police, soldiers, and civilians, are participating in the rescue efforts, according to officials, and they've been working nonstop to search through the rocks and rubble for survivors. Pope Francis in Rome offered his prayers for the victims.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
Pope Francis says, I express my closeness to the population of the Chinese village of Sinmo, struck yesterday morning by a landslide caused by intense rains. I pray for the dead and injured and for those who lost their homes. May God comfort the families and sustain the rescuers. I'm very close to you. Bulldozers and heavy diggers have also been deployed to remove boulders while the villagers and soldiers lifted rocks with their bare hands. Rescuers brought spotlights to continue the search after sunset. Authorities say the landslide was caused by torrential rain, and the cascading debris of mud and rocks blocked a 2-kilometer stretch of a river and a 1.6-kilometer section of a road, according to local officials. Landslides are a frequent danger in rural and mountainous parts of China, especially after heavy rains. Happening now, Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi is addressing members of the Indian diaspora in Washington and surrounding areas during his first visit to the United States under the Trump administration. Unlike Modi's 2014 reception in New York, attended by tens of thousands of people, this reception is invitation only. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thank you so much for listening. The Australian government is sending two military surveillance aircraft to help the Philippines in its fight against Islamist militants in southern Mindanao province. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney as Philippine forces have been fighting insurgents linked to the Islamic State group who seized the city of Marwawi last month.
Defense officials in Canberra say the spread of radical Islamism in Southeast Asia poses a direct threat to Australian interests. The government is sending two AP-3C Orion reconnaissance aircraft to help Philippine forces locate militants in the city of Marwawi, which they seized in late May. About 400 people, mostly Islamist insurgents, have died since the siege began. 1,000 civilians are thought to be trapped in the city, where it's feared that some are being held as human shields as Filipino forces advance. Tens of thousands of other residents have been displaced. A Philippine military spokesman said the Australian spy planes would help tackle extremism across Mindanao, an island of 22 million people in the southern Philippines, where separatists and kidnap gangs have been active for decades. Analysts believe that jihadis from other countries, including Indonesia and Malaysia, have joined the fighting in Marwawi. Sydney Jones, director of the Institute for Policy Analysis of Conflict, is worried that some of these foreign fighters could return home to spread unrest there.
It's clear that what's happening in Marwawi affects Indonesia and Malaysia. There are clearly fighters from Indonesia and Malaysia who are working with this coalition in Marwawi. And there's always the chance that fighters now with new combat experience and with new legitimacy can come back to their own countries and conduct violence there.
Security experts say the battle in Marwawi has exposed intelligence and operational failures by the Philippines military. They also criticize what they see as limited cooperation with neighboring Malaysia and Indonesia to stop extremism from spreading across the region. Foreign ministers from the three Southeast Asian countries have agreed on new measures to share information and to start joint Navy patrols to restrict the movement of fighters across maritime borders. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Pakistan and Afghanistan have agreed to establish a bilateral crisis management mechanism to avoid any breakdown in mutual communications and contacts in the event of terrorist attacks on both sides of their long-shared border. China brokered the deal, including a trilateral foreign minister-level dialogue. Follow us every day for the latest on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. On the anniversary of the beginning of the Korean War, the South's leader called on the North to stop its nuclear and ballistic missile development. South Korean Prime Minister Lee Nak-yeon addressed veterans and government officials at a ceremony Sunday honoring the 67th anniversary of the start of the 1950 to 1953 Korean War.
저는 북한 당국에 거듭 촉구합니다.
Lee said, I urge North Korea again to stop its nuclear and missile advancement if the country respects the June 15th Joint Declaration and October 4th Inter-Korean Summit Declaration. The country should come out on the path towards denuclearization. Amid fears that the North will conduct a sixth nuclear test this year in defiance of UN Security Council resolutions, Lee also called on Pyongyang to address its treatment of detainees from both South Korea and the United States. Lee said North Korea should also respect human rights. Recently, the international community was outraged over the death of U.S. citizen Otto Warmbier. North Korea should release our people and U.S. citizens detained in the country. The Korean War ended in armistice in 1953. However, a peace treaty was never signed. That left the two countries in a technical state of war. Meanwhile, a North Korean Taekwondo demonstration team visiting South Korea could present a way forward to help reduce tensions by using sports to reestablish a channel of dialogue and cooperation. South Korean President Moon Jae-in was on hand for the opening of the World Taekwondo Championship. It's being held in Muju, South Korea, where he welcomed his first inter-Korean Taekwondo exchange in a decade. The World Taekwondo Championship, being held over the next several days, is the largest competition of the sport ever to be held. 973 athletes are participating from 183 different countries. Taekwondo is a relatively modern sport based on ancient Korean martial arts that gained prominence in the decades after the division of the Korean Peninsula. Its development has been complicated by the bitter rivalry between the Communist North and Capitalist South. The two Koreas support competing federations that teach different martial arts techniques and develop different competition rules. World Taekwondo is recognized by the International Olympic Committee. Meanwhile, the 32 North Korean athletes attending the competition in South Korea this week are affiliated with the International Taekwondo Federation. It's a combat training-focused sport, and it allows more direct contact, including punches to the head and face. ITF athletes generally have not competed in the World Taekwondo Championship or the Olympics because their fighting styles are not compatible. Sangku Lewis is one of the few ITF martial arts instructors living in Seoul.
It's quite different sport-wise because in ITF sparring, lots of punching are allowed, and including punches to the face, whereas in WTF sparring, punches to the face are not allowed, and that's a very different strategy for fighting.
At this time, there are no plans for the two federations to merge, according to World Taekwondo officials. Choi Chung-won is director of the World Taekwondo Federation. He says North Koreans will stay for the duration of the games, and there may be other opportunities for dialogue with the press and interaction with other athletes from around the world.
They're going to perform a game in closing ceremony, so we'll have a lot of time and a chance to have a chat with them to in more details about the future exchange programs.
Chung-ung, a North Korean member of the IOC, and Do Jong-hwan, a new South Korean sports minister, both came to Muju for the opening of the Taekwondo Championships. They're expected to discuss North Korea's possible participation in the 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Games. The South Korean sports minister has proposed forming a joint women's ice hockey team as a show of Korean unity. President Moon says that he hopes North Korea will not only come to the Olympics next year, but he also suggested the two Koreas jointly bid to host the 2030 World Cup. Despite the North's repeated provocations and the recent death of former American detainee Otto Warmbier, South Korea public support for engagement with the North is increasing. Over 70% of South Koreans support reestablishing dialogue channels with North Korea, according to a recent survey by the National Unification Advisory Council. Brian Patton in Seoul has our thanks for sending us this story. Developing at this hour in Asia, an AirAsia flight returned safely to Perth, Australia after an apparent engine issue with the Airbus A330. Passengers on the flight to Kuala Lumpur told how they heard a bang and looked out the window to see the left engine vibrating violently under the wing. VOA Asia Facebook is your source for news and fun features. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, as Ramadan has just concluded, VOA's Indonesian reporters went to Philadelphia, one of the oldest cities in the United States, and it was briefly the nation's capital. Now it's the country's seventh largest metropolitan area. It boasts a diverse population, including a burgeoning Muslim community. As VOA Indonesian's Ariande Budianto found out, there's a store that sells all things Islamic to cater to some of that diversity.
This is the Islamic Place, a store that offers products of such a variety that Muslims in Philadelphia no longer need to shop anywhere else. When you step in, Islamic songs greet you. And the products range from Muslim clothing necessities to scented oils from the Middle East. The store carries goods from not just from the Middle East, but also other countries such as Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, and Indonesia. Alim Amin is one of the shop's managers.
Back when our family arrived in Philadelphia, there was a severe lack of items and merchandise available for the practicing Muslims. Even basic things like kufis for the brothers or khimars or hijabs for the sisters were not readily available. And we found methods of sourcing them and making them available.
Buyers come not only from Philadelphia, but also from other regions in the U.S. Some just want to see the largest Muslim fashion store on the East Coast. There are also regular customers and new ones, like Samira Dawkins, who came here to see what her friend was excited about.
I haven't seen a lot of stores that have like a lot of colors in the Kmart. And so far they have a lot of colors and different patterns in the Shaylas and overgarments. So I'm really happy with that. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a one-shot stop and pick up books and overheads. They have it all.
The Islamic Place started as a small shop in Philadelphia in 1989. As the Muslim population of Philadelphia has grown, so have the store sales. In 2002, the Islamic Place moved to its current location. To attract non-Muslims, the shop also sells books that teach readers about Islam. Philadelphia's Muslim community is among the fastest growing in America. That's good for business and for the community.
Their level of education or understanding about Islam is, I think, very high in Philadelphia. So as the rest of the nation does struggle a little, I think we have this little oasis here in Philadelphia, which we are very blessed with.
It seems the store is not only supplying the area's Muslim community, but also is educating the larger Philadelphia community. For producer Supriyono, I'm Ariadna Budianto, VOA News, Philadelphia.
New prosthetics and exoskeletons help the disabled move around, but one-size-fits-all creations don't always work. VOA's Kevin Enix reports scientists at Carnegie Mellon University have figured out a quick and easy way to make each prosthetic different.
Walking. It seems simple enough, but it's actually an incredibly complicated process, as researcher Stephen Collins explained via Skype.
Everybody is different. So what makes walking easier for you might actually make walking harder for me. And we're all constantly changing, especially when we're adapting to some new assistive device. And so we think that these challenges help explain why, of the thousands of devices that have been designed over the past several decades, only a handful have been shown to make walking easier.
And that is why most prosthetic limbs or attachable exoskeletons don't work all that well. Philippe Malcolm spoke to VOA via Skype.
But like, if you think about to find the shoe that fits you best, that's not so easy. Exoskeletons are not a passive device typically, in contrast to footwear. They apply this type of robotic assistance pattern. And it's not as simple as just mimicking what the human does.
To solve the problem, researchers from Carnegie Mellon University designed a new prosthetic and paired it with a complex artificial intelligence algorithm that analyzes the way a person walks. The computer then suggests small tweaks to the exoskeleton's assistance patterns, which make it work more efficiently.
The algorithm looks at how you've responded to this set of assistance patterns and gets a sense of what's working for you, what's not, and comes up with some new guesses as to what's going to be the best pattern of assistance for you.
The computer monitors how much energy a person is using as they walk. The less energy used, the better.
It's really important to improve energy economy for people with disabilities because they expend much more energy to walk the same distance or at the same speed as people who don't have a disability. And that really limits how far they're going to walk in a day, or it seems to influence their choices as to whether they're going to go do something.
Collins says the algorithm can optimize an exoskeleton's efficiency in about an hour. Right now, it can take a therapist weeks to do. His team is working with the Veterans Administration and believes the technology will be in doctors' offices within 5 years. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
We thank you for listening to VOA Asia Today. Remember, you can hear us anytime you like online. We thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer, Aydin Utku, managing editor, Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, and David Bird on our team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.